You're listening to
the Board Games and Beer Podcast.
Welcome to the Board Games and Beer Podcast, episode 24. We are doing a special episode tonight because we are going to just do an interview with our special guest, Jeremy Commander, and we will get to him in just a moment. But I want to introduce my lovely co-host, Morgan. How are you?
I am great, Val. How are you?
I'm doing really well. And just seems like we just did this a few days ago, doesn't it?
You know?
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to mention that our theme music was written by the astonishing Andrew Allen. So without further ado, I would like to bring in Jeremy Commander. So Jeremy, how are you this evening?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. So anyway, Morgan, I think it's your turn there.
Yep, absolutely. So Jeremy, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I design games as a hobby, and Booze Barons, that's the game we'll be talking about tonight that I'm doing with Overworld Games, is one of three games that I signed last year. I signed three different games with different game companies. Secret Identity team games are kind of my favorite genre of game, and so there's two of those games that I got signed with different game companies, and I do this because I enjoy it. It's fun to make games, and I primarily work with a design partner who I've known for a long time, and we collaborate on games because we find that we do better games together than we do individually. Although Booze Barons is a solo design of mine that I've been working on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And in my day job, I'm a teacher. I'm a software trainer. I teach people how to use computer software.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. So I guess then you gave us a little bit. So what's kind of been your biggest influence that got you kind of into gaming in general, I guess?
Oh, well, a long time ago, when I was a teenager, I got into TCGs because my buddies were into trading card games. And I really enjoyed trading card games as I wasn't a really big video game player. And I liked that, mm-hmm. that competitive nature and the different things you could explore and the things you could do. And so mm-hmm. I was a pretty serious trading card player for a long time. I would travel to compete in tournaments around the country, and I was ranked in some games pretty highly. I won, you know, money playing trading card games. And I did that for a long time. And the trading card market has since matured and declined. Mm-hmm. And if you want to play competitively, you can probably play Magic, maybe My Little Pony or Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh!, mm-hmm. Really, if you're an adult, then Magic is the only real option there.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I don't hate Magic, but I'm not a big Magic fan. Mm-hmm. And Magic is a very competitive money game. And mm-hmm. so that, you know, there's a lot of players that are playing at a high level that are super competitive, some cheat, and then it takes a lot of money to play. And I always played the second tier TCGs that were more for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so I was like, well, I need something to replace this hobby. So some friends of mine I knew from TCGs introduced me to Euro or designer style board games mm-hmm. several years ago. And I, you know, my impression of board games at that time was the Parker Brothers Monopoly stuff, the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
board games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know about board games. They take a long time to play, and I don't really like Monopoly. And so, no, I'm having a board game party. Come over to my house, play some games. And we played Puerto Rico
mm-hmm.
and Ticket to Ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, wow, these games are much better than what I remembered as a kid. And I had done a bunch of design work for TCGs. So I'd gotten further in the industry and in that hobby, I had volunteered for game companies, and then even as a designer or a developer for them, working on stuff. I was like, well, now that that's dead, I'd like to try designing a board game. And so I tried making some board games. Booze Barons came about because my local game group, we really liked a board game called Shadow Hunters. And that's
mm-hmm.
a Secret Identity team game
mm-hmm.
from Z-Man.
Mm-hmm.
However, Shadow Hunters is all dice-based, so it's really random. But it has a really clever thing where you don't know who's on your team when you start the game. And
mm-hmm.
you have to figure that out during the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's often three teams in the game instead of two. And when you play something like Classic Werewolf, there's two teams, and you know who's on your team or if you're a werewolf. Or the Resistance, and there's two teams, and you know who's on your team if you're a spy. And
mm-hmm.
those are fun games. I enjoy them, but I like, wow, that's this three-team dynamic. That's really interesting. I wish there was another game where there was always three teams.
Mm-hmm.
And Shadowhunters and the Resistance, they play better with more players. When you have a lot of players, then you have a better game. So, like, I wonder if I could design a game where you always have three teams, but I don't like the open your eyes, close your eyes phase.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm worried people will cheat and or they'll mess that up. Oh, I'm sorry, I was looking at my phone. We got to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like the player elimination. So, like in Werewolf, you play a classic werewolf and you get killed. The werewolves eat you, and
mm-hmm.
you sit around for 2 hours and wait for your buddies to finish the game. That's not very fun. It's like, all right, can I do a game where you always have three teams? There's no elimination and there's no night phase or open your eyes, close your eyes. And so that's what inspired the prototype for Booze Barons.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
So I guess in your design process, was there really kind of how did that go for Booze Barons as far as from conceptualizing to bringing it effectively to market? I know that we were talking just a hair before the podcast started about, when this was going to launch up on Kickstarter. You know, can you kind of take us through that process?
Sure. So the originally I thought, I'll just design the game and make a prototype for fun. And as I started doing it, like, I might be able to make this game myself. Kickstarter was taken off when I started work on the game originally. And I thought, well, what would be a logical way to do three teams? So originally I had a Cold War theme. So there is the communist spies, there was the free world spies, and there was the third world spies. And those were the three teams in the game. And so I started working on the game, and I thought, oh, maybe I will kickstart this myself. I even commissioned a little bit of artwork for it, so the prototype looked nice. And started working on it, and I started backing a lot of Kickstarter campaigns and learning as much as I could about the board game industry and Kickstarter. So I consider myself a Kickstarter super backer. I've backed about 300 Kickstarter campaigns now, and most of them are board game campaigns. And then I some of the pledge levels you could do is like, meet the publisher and ask them questions. So I would pledge for those, and I'd go meet the publisher at Gen Con or another con and say, hey, how does this work? And, how do press sheets work? And I was trying to learn as much as I could about the industry. And I realized that I didn't really want to self-publish because that takes an enormous amount of time and effort. That's a lot of stress to deal with China and get your press files just right. And then, you have a typo and this color's off and you've got to fix that. And these cards got crimped. You have to mail out replacements and all that. So now, I really want to maybe take this to a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
So the game wasn't good enough until maybe 2013 that I showed it to some publishers. So the game, it was a good game at that point, but it wasn't a great game.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept working on it, like, what can I do to make this better? And then I took it to BGGCon 2013, and
mm-hmm.
I played it with a bunch of other game designers, and I got some good suggestions on how to improve the movement system and the card system in the game. I thought, I'm going to try these.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put together a new prototype with those mechanics, and I was gonna originally I reskinned the game for Euphoria. Jamie Stigmeier of Stonemaier Games said, "Hey, I was looking for other games to set in the Euphoria universe. Call the Euphoria universe that has four teams competing against each other. I bet I could do that with my three team game." So I reskinned it for Euphoria and tried it out on my local guys. And Brian Hank of Overworld Games was there on that game night and played this game. And he goes, "Oh, I really like this game. This is really good. This is working really well." And so did the other people who played it. The game had clicked and had gone from a good game to a great game. It had crossed that hump. Like, he goes, "Well, if Jamie doesn't want it, then I want it."
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So I sent a copy to Jamie, and it got stolen off his front porch.
Oh, no.
So the prototype got stolen. And he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, man. I never got the package." And we looked, and sure enough, it arrived, and someone had stolen it. So someone out there has the stolen prototype for the Euphoria version.
Geez.
And says, "Can you send me another one?" So I made another one, and I sent it out to him. And he goes, "Hey, I'll take a look at it." And I said, I could use an answer if it's something you want. I built it for you rebuilt the game with your world in mind.
Mm-hmm.
If not, then Brian wants to do it, and Brian and Jamie know each other. And Jamie's like, "No, I think I'm going to pass. You should do it with Brian." So I signed the game with Brian, and Brian was excited to, this is a bigger game than his previous two games, goes to 9 players, and it's got more stuff going on in it, and he's like, I think Brian was excited to kind of grow Overworld Games to the next level, and so I signed it with him about a year ago, and so it's been in development there. We re-themed the game again to Prohibition, and so now you're a booze baron, you're a bootlegger during Prohibition, smuggling booze and trying to make the most money for your mob.
Mm-hmm.
And found a great artist with Derek Bacon, who does amazing art for the game, and developed the game a little more, polished it. We managed to cut some of the rules, slim the game down a bit more, and now we're really excited to bring it to Kickstarter and to put the game out.
Awesome. So you've kind of, you know, briefly talked about the game. So I guess my thing is, so why don't you kind of walk us through kind of like how the gameplay goes? I mean, kind of, you mentioned what to do, but exactly kind of what are you doing while you're playing this game?
You got it. So there are six locations in the game, and they represent different speakeasies that you can deliver booze to. And this harkens back to the spy theme, where originally there was six continents, and you would fly all around the world like James Bond and go to different continents to collect intelligence. And so I left Antarctica out because there was no reason anyone would be going there. But the other six continents were there. And I want to tell you a story about that, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
For the spy theme, I originally had a board, like a board, and you would go to the six continents, and there were six spaces on the board. And I got a map, and it was the standard kind of Mercator projection you're used to with the continents on it. And I color-coded each continent, but I wanted the board not to be too crowded. And so I didn't put the names of the continents on the map. It was just a picture of the continent, and I color-coded them. So they each have a different color. And then there's cards in the game that would say, move to Africa or move to Australia. Mm-hmm. And when I was playtesting the game, about 5% of adults could not find Africa on a map of the world. And they would ask me,
oh, no, that's scary.
Okay. They're like, where's Africa? How do I move? Which one is Africa again? And I'm like, wow, I thought, you know, people would know that. You know, not countries. I don't expect you to tell me where Uganda is or Libya. That's hard. But like Africa, you know, I thought that was pretty easy. And so I had to label the map and put all the labels on there for the map. And then I had another card that said, oh, you can travel across the Pacific Ocean. And so you would fly east from Japan and you would wind up in North America. And I actually had an arrow on the map that would show you flying over the ocean and would wrap around the board. So you could wrap around the board from one side to the other. And people ask me, hey, so yeah, if I go west from the U.S., where do I wind up? And I'm like, well, where do you think you go? Africa? No. Europe? No. Like, well, if you fly west across the Pacific, what do you hit? I don't know. So like, all right, so I got to label that too. So I put labels on there, like, this goes to Asia, and had to change. So that was a very interesting experience playtesting the game. So now I don't take those things for granted. Everything is labeled or very clear.
Oh, man,
so in the game, there are six locations, six speakeasies that demand booze, and from the deck, a bunch of cards come out every round that represent demand, people wanting to buy certain brands of booze or certain flavors of booze. And they come out half as many as the number of players round up, and they assign them to different locations. And so then all players get to choose where they're going to go simultaneously. So you have simultaneous movement. From your hand of movement cards, you're going to pick one. You're all going to put it down the table, flip it, and you all move to that location at the same time. You might all pile up in the same spot, or you might scatter across the board. Now the locations are tarot-sized cards, and that's so the game can be modular. You can actually change out the locations, and they're all two-sided. So the game will change depending on which side of which location you use to give you some better replay value. You all move around across the board, and then each player, starting with the booze player, Baron, who's the start player, takes one action. And the actions you can do are to collect a card from your location, make a delivery. So if one of the demand cards there reflects your secret booze type, the kind of moonshine you secretly make, you can collect that card and you put it face up in front of you. Each card has five moonshine types on it. So now everyone at the table knows you're one of those five moonshines. They don't know which one you are. Mm-hmm. You know they're one of those fives, and you just scored a point for your mob, for your team, because each delivery is worth a point. The second action you could take instead of a delivery is to tail another player. And when you tail another player, you get to pick up all their delivery cards that they've accumulated and look at them. So you can try to figure out what their secret booze type is. Mm-hmm. And if you can guess what their booze type is, then you will steal their movement card they used to move to that location, and you'll cripple them. They can never go back to that location again, and that movement card's worth 2 points or two coins for your team. So their team just lost 2 points, and your team just gained 2 points. Mm-hmm. So if you can expose what the secret booze type is of another player by figuring out their secret identity, that pays you much more in the game. Mm-hmm. And the last thing you can do is if you tail someone, instead of exposing them, you can, like, oh, I can't figure out what they are. They could be one of several boozes, that you can just steal a card from them after you tail them and take one card as long as it matches your booze type as well. And that's the basic game. So the game starts off with everyone looking around the table and you're trying to figure out what team everybody's on for what cards they collect. Because you really want to figure out who's on your team and who's not. Because you don't want to be tailing people or going after people on your team. And about halfway through the game, it'll reach this turning point where now someone has figured out who someone is, they get exposed. And for each player that's exposed, the game will accelerate because there's only 12 booze types in the game. So each person gets flipped face up. Now the possibilities of what everybody else is lower. And because you know the kind of the size of the teams, usually let's say in a six-player game, there's two people on each of the three teams. That'll start to narrow down what team are people on too. And so suddenly the game will hit this turning point where it starts to get really fast. It's like, oh, man, I know who knew he is, and I can expose him and get 2 points. And the game will crescendo or accelerate at the end until there's only one player who's left who hasn't been exposed. And when that happens, then the game will end.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's really interesting. So obviously if you get up to 9 players, then you've got three teams of three and so on. So it's obviously so I'm just kind of wondering if you're playing with 8 or 7, how does that kind of work?
Yeah. So let's say you're playing with 7. What you'll do is when you deal out the booze type cards at the start of the game, there's a way to randomize them. So there's 2 teams of 2 and 1 team of 3.
Okay.
And the table doesn't know what the team of 3 is. They don't know which of the 3 teams is the team of 3. So that's secret 2, and you've got to figure that out. And then at the end of the game, when you score it, you simply throw out the middle score from the team of 3. So the low-scoring guy counts, the high-scoring guy counts, and you throw out the middle score, and you use that to compare those 2 people to the other teams of 2. If you've got a 5-player game, you've got 2 teams of 2 and a team of 1, and the team of 1 will double their score at the end of the game.
However
they do, they double it, and they compare that to the teams of 2 to see which team will win.
Okay, awesome. So you kind of got all that worked out, because I was kind of interested in that, the way you were kind of going with that. I was like, well, how the heck are you going to do it when you get to kind of those goofy numbers of 7 and, and 5 and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So you got that worked out. That's good.
It always preserves that 3 teams. That gives you a different flavor from other Secret Identity team games. You got the 2 teams. Now there's always 3 teams in the game. And especially with more players, it's really fun to get that 3-way battle going on. Where you're like, if one team is clearly winning, the other 2 teams will gang up on it and stuff like that. So if you're the underdog, you have got a better chance of catching up. It makes the game really tight until the end.
Yeah, so I've gotten a little sneak peek at some of the artwork and stuff like that. So is this artwork that you got, what I think really looks cool, is this kind of the final product, or is that still a little bit of a work in progress?
The artwork we've got, so the artwork from Derek, like the little the cartoons of the different locations and characters, those are final. He should be finishing I think I got the last one today. So those are finishing this week. The layout on the cards, in terms of the exact layout and the font size and all that stuff, we're still tweaking that. We have a rough draft. Like, oh, I think that font's too small and this color should be brighter. So the layout type stuff is still tweaking, but the artwork is the real artwork. And then for the Kickstarter campaign, we've got some fun bonuses kind of planned. So I got a buddy, a coworker who's a writer. He's a good writer. So I said, hey, can I pay you to write a choose-your-own-adventure-style game set in the world of Booze Barons? And we'll give that out to Kickstarter backers for free. Because I had backed a Kickstarter earlier this year from a local guy, Brandon Roush, had this game. Brandon had this interesting thing where he had a little choose-your-own-adventure set in the world of his game. It was really short, though. He only had, like, 3 choices to make. He was doing Lair of the Lich King was an expansion for his game. And he had this this is really cool. So Evan goes, yeah, Evan's my coworker. He's like, I'll take a look at that. Send me the details. So I send him the artwork and the names of all the characters in the game. And he gets back and he has this giant branching story of Choose Your Own Adventure, where you're one of the mobsters in the game, and you're trying to survive this one key night in the city where the mobs go to war. And it's very entertaining. So I just got it last week. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. So we're going to put that out as an update for backers. There'll be an HTML version you can play on the Overworld Games website and kind of do that choose your own adventure. And then we're also going to put it out as an EPUB and iBook. So you can download it and put it on your e-reader as well and read through the book. That'll be like a free bonus for Kickstarter backers.
Oh, that's cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yes, it does.
Ever read those choose your own adventure stories as a kid?
Heck yes.
Oh, Morgan did. I didn't.
I love those. And so we've got it. And just like the real ones, you, like most of the endings, you die and you got to find the one good ending. And so it's very entertaining. I had a blast reading it. And so we're really looking forward to that.
So I know, obviously, you know, we're kind of keeping it focused here on Booze Barons, but I know you mentioned having a couple other games kind of in the works as it was going. You want to tell us just a little bit about what you've got going there?
Sure. With Level 99, I signed a game called Secret Society. That's another secret identity team game. And for that game, I did it with my design partner. And we had played One Night Werewolf. Have you guys played One Night Werewolf?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So we liked we really liked the voting mechanism in that game. Oh, that's a clever way of doing things. And we're like, could we build maybe a more gamery game? I love One Night Werewolf. And I've just backed One Night Werewolf and Vampire on Kickstarter. And I've backed the previous two. Ted and Tony are local to us in the Bay Area. They're super nice at Bezier Games. I said, like, oh, can we make like an advanced version of that? And so we made a game where it's got the kind of the voting mechanic of One Night Werewolf, but you have only 1 minute to decide who you're going to vote for, and you're voting over several rounds. No one's eliminated, and there are four teams in the game. So there are four secret societies trying to take over the world, and you're playing for two teams at once. So the twist is you can win with either of your teams. And so when something comes up that's going to benefit one team, but it's going to hurt your other team, what do? Do you throw one of your teams under the bus? Do you try to kind of make it fall in the middle? And so it's a very fast-paced game. It's only a 15-minute game. So it's a 15-minute game that plays super fast, and you're playing two secret teams at once, these different secret societies trying to take over the world. Then coming from a TCG background, I really like drafting games. Mm-hmm. So I think secret identity and drafting games are my favorite genres of games. And so let's see if we can make a drafting game. And I love Seven Wonders. Seven Wonders is a great game. Mm-hmm. But when I teach Seven Wonders to my next-door neighbor or my family, and like, okay, so there's these seven resource types, and you play over three rounds, and you can do three things with each cards, and you have inter-round military scoring, and these green science cards, they have exponential scoring, and I watch their head explode. They're like, bleh!
I agree with you there. I think the resource thing is always the thing that gets most people when I'm explaining it to them. They just can't get that, oh, no, you just make that every turn, you know.
Yeah.
I get you there.
It's challenging. So, like, I love Seven Wonders. Like, I really want a simpler drafting game. And so my design partner, like, can we make a drafting game that you could play on lunch, that you could set up, play, and clean up in, you know, under an hour, and still have enough meaningful choices that it's a meaningful drafting game. And so we were working on a game, and that's probably maybe the strongest of the games we've worked on together. That one, currently it's called Pass the Paint, and that's signed with R&R Games. They're going to retheme it to something else. I don't know what the new theme is going to be, but it's a drafting game, and it plays in about 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And you do have a meaningful draft choice. And we developed that game before Sushi Go hit the market. And since then, Sushi Go has hit the market, and that's kind of taken up that space for the casual drafting game. And I enjoy Sushi Go, but as a designer, what bothers me is there's dead cards in that game. You could pass me a hand of three cards, and I can't do anything with those three cards. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all dead to me. Where in Seven Wonders, I can always do something with the card. I can discard it for coins. I can use it to build my wonder. There's always something I can do with each card. And so we managed to get our game to be as simple as, say, Sushi Go, but without those dead cards. So you could always have options down to the last card.
Oh, that's cool. So I'm going to digress a little bit here, too. So from some of the stuff I understand, so you've had something to do with Star Trek, the TCG game? Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. So I was that was the TCG that got me into that hobby in the first place. Mm-hmm. Some of my buddies played that, and so I played that for a long time, and then I eventually got to work on some sets. I got to design some cards and be a playtester and develop some cards, and so my name is on some of the later expansions for that game. And then after Decipher was the game that the company that made that game, after they lost the license for Star Trek, there was a player organization that formed on the internet called the Continuing Committee, and they said, hey, we're going to keep the game going. And so they actually got one of the original Decipher designers, and they got the actual art files, and they got a very talented Photoshop artist. And so they said, what we're going to do is we're going to keep designing sets of this game, and we're going to put them up as a free-to-download PDF. So you just print them out, cut them out, and sleeve over your existing cards, and new expansions keep coming out for the game. And they've been doing that for, like, 5 or 6 years now. They do 2 or 3 expansions a year, and they've been very, they have thousands of people still playing that game all over the world. And the quality of the stuff they're putting out, I would say, is equal to or better than what was happening when the Decipher was producing it. It's very impressive. Mm-hmm. So I worked for them for about a year. I was there. They, at that time, they were only doing the second edition of the game. And they were like, oh, we really need to get the first edition of the game, kind of the classic version of the game. We need to restore that and get people playing that again and do something with it. So they brought me on board to kind of get that rolling for them. And so I worked for that on that for about a year. Mm-hmm. Got that started up, and now they're doing 2 or 3 sets for the original version of the game every year. Mm-hmm. And then there was a spinoff game called Tribbles. There was a Tribbles TCG.
Right.
It's like an Uno TCG. It's really simple. It's really silly and fun. And we had I designed an expansion for that with a couple of my local buddies, and it was testing. We were still playing it all the time. After our main trick tournaments, we'd sit around and play Tribbles and say, hey, how about we throw this up on the continuing community site? And like, yeah, we'll do that as an April Fool's joke. Mm-hmm. And so they got their web programmer to slowly program the website to be clogged with tribbles, starting with just one tribble on the website, and then they started multiplying, and they took over the whole website leading up to April 1st, and we dropped this Tribbles expansion for the Tribbles TCG. And it was super popular. People loved it. And so now they do like a Tribbles expansion every year, and they're working on 3 TCGs there. Doing that. So that's a lot of fun, too. I saw them at Gen Con, and they had a great turnout for the Tribbles TCG National Championship, and they had all, like, 20, 30 people there playing this Tribbles TCG, having a blast.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, because I played a bunch of that when it first came out, and I really liked it.
It was a fun game. It was very interesting that it wasn't just a lot of TCGs are, oh, I attack you, and you lose 3 points of health or honor, mm-hmm, or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And now you ping me back, and that's the whole game. And the Star Trek game was like, no, this is a race game. You're going to go out and explore planets and solve missions and mm-hmm. travel through time. And it was really a wide open world. I really enjoyed that. It was a very different dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it too. In fact, I still got all of my original stuff. And I did, matter of fact, it's kind of interesting because I just had like dug some of it out here just recently and went through a bunch of my extra cards and gave it to somebody in my game group. And I was actually in a kind of a group, we used to play it all the time and in tournaments and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went away, and I was like, I kind of miss playing it now, and I've got a ton of cards and stuff from it. And just the thing you just mentioned, I just found that site here, I don't know, a couple of months ago, and I've been looking at some of the stuff on there. So it's kind of got me back into it a little bit.
It's never been cheaper. You print them mm-hmm. out, sleeve over their existing stuff, and you can
exactly.
play.
Exactly.
You get local tournaments going again with your buddies, and mm-hmm. it's not going to cost you guys anything.
Yep.
Or they run events at Gen Con. It's interesting because the player base of that game really is worldwide. Mm-hmm. So they alternate their world championship between Australia, North America, and Europe. Mm-hmm. And they'll get 50 to 100 people to show up on whatever continent to play that game.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very impressive for a dead game. It's been dead for years. There's still a very active, large fan base all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so it is the Board Games and Beer podcast, and we would be highly remiss if we just kind of glazed over this question or skipped it. So we have to ask, what beer would go with Booze Barons?
Put you on the spot there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there we go. I'm trying to. I had it in my head, and now I forgot it. There is. It's the beer brand with the little eyeballs that's got the pro. What is it now? They got Big Daddy IPA, and they got a bunch of, they have a prohibition theme for
yeah.
their beers.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember what it is, and I'm spacing on it, but it would fit very thematically with the game.
Speakeasy?
Yeah, Speakeasy. There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
It's all the artwork has got the same tone of being in prohibition and mobsters and stuff. So that would probably fit well, as you'd really feel as like it fits in that world.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cool. Yeah, we have to ask you that because that's just part of what we do on the show. And unfortunately, we tend to throw our guests under the bus for that question all the time. So.
It's like a tradition. I spend Val's money on Kickstarter. We mm-hmm. throw our guests under the bus.
But hopefully it wasn't too painful.
No, not at all.
No.
So I run a local game night at a round table here. And so they serve mm-hmm. that beer there. And they got those signs out. Like, oh, you know, that really goes thematically well with the game. You're a booze baron smuggling booze. And so mm-hmm. There are three teams in the game. There's a wine team, a liquor team, and a beer team. So only a third of the booze gangsters there are beer guys. But we have fun names for the beer. There's like a muscle out stout, and all the boozes have fun games. And they like there's like shotgun vodka, mm-hmm. and there's a sugar daddy sherry. And so all the boozes in the game have a fun little creative name.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome. So I think the question would be, Jeremy, so when is this going to hit and how long is it running for?
It's going to go live on Kickstarter Friday or August 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And pardon me, I think there's a helicopter in my background. I don't know if you can hear it or not.
No, I can't.
Oh,
we're good.
Okay. So it's going to go live.
Just like my phone and so on that's going off earlier.
Real life. You know, I don't, it doesn't bother me at all. I prefer a podcast to be authentic and real rather than sound, you know, overly slick.
Yeah.
It's going to go live August 29th. That's a Friday. And it's not going to be a long campaign. I can't remember. It's either going to be 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a fairly short campaign. Mm-hmm. And we've got a lot of fun content lined up to do during the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So what are we kind of looking as far as like entry levels and stuff like that to get in? I mean, if you just want to get a hold of just the, you know, base game or whatever, what are we looking at?
Yeah, yeah. There was Brian and Clayton at Overworld Games. They've been going back and forth mm-hmm. about how realistically to price shipping.
Mm-hmm.
When you back a Kickstarter game, now previously with Kickstarter, you couldn't charge shipping separately, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you had to do these pledge levels. Well, if you were in the U.S., back at this level and the shipping is included, or if you're internationally, back at this level and you had to kind of figure out what you're going to charge for all of that. So now Kickstarter has this mechanism where after you back, it says, well, where in the world are you? Your shipping will be this much, and it charges you a more accurate reflection of the shipping based on where you are. And that's a new mechanism. So the trend on a Kickstarter now is that a lot of campaigns have a lower pledge level, and then mm-hmm. they have accurate shipping, what it actually costs to ship it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a lot of debate, like, well, but will that freak people out to see what they're really paying for shipping? Because typically on a Kickstarter campaign,
mm-hmm.
you know, either you don't pay for shipping because it's included,
right?
Or you pay some trivial amount. It's like, oh, $5.
Mm-hmm.
And it really doesn't cost $5 to ship it to you. It costs more than that, especially if it's mm-hmm. a large game. But
right.
they want to kind of hide that in the price. And so they've been going back and forth on exactly how they're going to price it. It's somewhere going to be between like $35 and $40. And that's a realistic price of what it costs to produce and ship the game.
Okay, I gotcha. Awesome. Oh, that sounds really, really cool, actually. And I think what kind of intrigues me about this is that you know, one of the board game groups I'm involved with, we do this traditional board game night, and it doesn't really include traditional board games. We just kind of call it that. But we get a lot of people, and it's nice to – there's not a lot of, like, large
yeah.
amounts of people games, and so we're
yeah.
always looking for something like that. So I'm immediately intrigued by this game just because of that simple fact. And the theme's kind of interesting. It's a little bit different. Something that you normally see, you know, about getting drunk and prohibition and stuff like that. Teach a little.
Well, don't drink your product, man. They won't make
yeah.
any money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's what I like, you know, being able to play nine people is
yeah.
good. There's not a lot of, you know, a lot of games revolve around the 2 to 4, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, you know, because of the way things work. But it's cool to have some good party games and stuff like that. And I think that I'm just kind of wondering if that's why you went with One World Games, because they kind of tend to they're very heavy in the party games, and I really like this stuff.
The social games is their
mm-hmm.
brand. Those
mm-hmm.
those social games, that's their thing. And so
mm-hmm.
it was a good fit
right.
for their line. If you played Good Cop Bad Cop and
yep.
New Salem,
mm-hmm.
this is the same kind of thing. This goes maybe to a little higher number of players, and it's got some more going on.
Mm-hmm.
My game group too. We the games that hit the table the most are the games that play five or more.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at my pile of games, and there's so many 2 to 4 player games that just never make it out of the pile. Because
mm-hmm.
we've always got that fifth guy or sixth guy or gal
mm-hmm.
looking to play. And we're like, well, there's six of us. I guess we can make 2 3-player games. We really want to all play a game together. So I wanted a game that would scale well for
mm-hmm.
lots of players. And so it'll play from 3 to 9. And another trick is when you get a big game like that, you can have a lot of downtime, right, where you're
mm-hmm.
sitting around and just waiting for your turn. And so the way that Booze Barons is designed is the simultaneous movement, so that's all happening at once. And then on your turn, you're just taking one action that's really fast, Mm-hmm. And whenever you make a delivery, you are giving a clue to the whole table about what your secret booze type is. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not paying attention when it's not my turn, I'm playing on my phone, I will lose. Mm-hmm. The game heavily rewards you for paying attention when it's not your turn, because there's all these clues going out, and the mm-hmm. people who pay the closest attention when it's not their turn are going to do very well in the game. So you're very involved mm-hmm. when it's not your turn, and it's going around really fast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. I like that right there. That sounds really good, like it would work. And it, just to say, you know, having you on our podcast, it just seems like a very appropriate game, too. You know, Booze Barons.
Being there you go.
I mean, we're beer, but it's still alcohol, so, you know, it works in that.
But there's four beers in the game, so yeah. you've got
to. Oh, wow, okay.
Hey, see?
Yeah, there we go. So, anyway, Morgan, anything else you might want to ask Jeremy here?
All right, Jeremy, I'm going to have our interviewees start doing this, and Roger, I'm springing this one on you.
Mm-hmm.
But give us the 30 seconds or less elevator pitch commercial version. Why should someone back your game?
Sure, you got it. You got it. It's a secret identity game with some novel mechanics. There's always three teams in the game. It scales perfectly from 3 to 9 players. It rewards you heavily for paying attention when it's not your team, or just when it's not your turn. And there is no night phase and no player elimination. So if you like social games or secret identity games, this is going to be a great game to add to your library.
Awesome. Well
fantastic.
Done.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think he did it under 30 seconds as well.
You're the one timing it, not me.
Yep. Yeah, that was brilliant.
And we have great art from Derek Bacon. We had saw his work on some other games, and I was so excited to get him because the artwork he's been doing for the game just looks fantastic. It's got this big, bold, cartoony style, and you really you feel you're in this mobster cartoon. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Jeremy, I really want to thank you for coming on and talking about this. I think you've got me sold on getting in on this for sure.
I didn't do it this time.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's a first, Jeremy. That's got to be a first because it's usually her. It's usually her that gets me into these things. So, yeah, that's a difficult thing to do. So anything else you might want to add before maybe we head on out of here?
I'll do one more thing. We'll do a little podcast cross-promotion. Mm-hmm. So I do a podcast with Brian and someone I know from the Star Trek TCG, Richard New.
Okay.
And there's lots of podcasts out there about board games and about board game design. Mm-hmm. And as a designer going through learning about the industry, there wasn't a lot of good source of industry information. Like, well, why would I sell my game to a publisher? What do I need to do before I approach a publisher? Mm-hmm. What are publishers looking for? If I mm-hmm. decide to self-publish, what kind of computer files do I need to make? What's the difference between CMYK color and RGB color? And what is mm-hmm. all the stuff I've got to learn? So we started a podcast that's just on the business side of board games.
Mm-hmm.
So people in your audience are interested in designing their own game, they can check that out. That's the Forbidden Limb podcast.
Okay.
And it's just about the business. So it's if you're not a game designer, it's going to be pretty dry because we're all about the business side. We're not talking about theme or mechanics so much as to like, okay, here's how to get a fulfillment company. Here's the questions mm-hmm. you want to ask your fulfillment company.
Right.
It's really about the business mechanics of mm-hmm. doing a board game. But that's very valuable if you intend to self-publish or if you want to take your game, develop it, and sell it to a publisher.
Mm-hmm. I've actually listened to that, and I think it's interesting. Actually, I like it. You know, this gives a little more into the whatever. I mean, the more you get into this, I get a little more intrigued about the entire process. You know, just playing the game, but you know, we tend to interview, you know, game designers and stuff like that. So to me, it's very interesting to see what they kind of go through and not even really thinking about some of those things. You know, that people think, oh, it'd be easy to do it, but it's not. You know,
the Kickstarter's funded, it's successful, and then suddenly you have all these problems and your nightmares begin.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Well, hopefully not in your case, I would hope.
No, Brian is now, Overworld Games has now managed 3 successful Kickstarters, and their machinery is down tight, and they're doing a great job. So that's when I went with a publisher, to get someone who had that big back end and knew what they were doing. So I have mm-hmm. great confidence in them that it'll be a very good product for that. So having backed a lot of Kickstarters, you guys backed a lot of Kickstarters too, I feel bad because I see some designers kind of making the same mistakes over and over again on Kickstarter and mm-hmm. getting bit by them. Like, right. A lot of people say this is the golden age of board games. And I think I agree with that. There's more games hitting the market than ever before. And there's a lot of junk, but there's a lot of really good games mm-hmm. coming out from lots of different sources. And the board game industry is growing by like 20% a year or more, and has done so for 5 years. You know, more and more people are trying these games and kind of redefining this is not Monopoly. This is a whole different world mm-hmm. of what these board games are. And so I really wanted to try and provide a resource for the designers out there to make better games for everybody. So when you mm-hmm. back a Kickstarter and that guy has learned something from your podcast or from the Forbidden Limb, they make a better game, or they have fewer mm-hmm. issues, and I get a better product supporting them on Kickstarter, and then everybody wins.
Awesome. Excellent.
So, hey, while we're kind of over on the topic, where can people find you on social media? How can they get a hold of mm-hmm. you? What's a website to look at?
Sure. On Twitter, I'm at Jeremy Norcal. I wanted to get J Commander. That's my favorite. But Jorn Commander on Sweden beat me to it. So even though he's never tweeted anything, bummed out. So I'm at Jeremy Norcal on Twitter. And I try to be respectful on Twitter. It's important to me. So I do not tweet about what I'm eating for lunch or what I'm thinking. It's all board game content. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of – I like to do a visual review. So I built this little template as a game designer that's perfectly square, and it summarizes the board game with pictures for you. So it tells you the time to play, number of players, the skill level, and the amount of luck, and a very short description of the game. And I put that up on Instagram, on Twitter, and I try to do one of those a week, just kind of review a game. So you can look at this and in 30 seconds decide if you want to check that game out or not. Mm-hmm. And so if you do follow me on Twitter, you'll get some content of value and not spam.
Okay. You don't have any web pages or anything like that?
I got a website. The website is boardgamebuilders.com, and mm-hmm. that is mostly focused on – I run an annual Protospiel event. Mm-hmm. If you've heard of Protospiel or Unpub, mm-hmm. kind of these organizations to support games. So there really wasn't any on the West Coast. And in developing Booze Barons, I took Booze Barons to Protospiel, Michigan. I took it to Protospiel, Austin. I took it to Protospiel, Houston. I took it to Unpub 5 in Baltimore. And I took it to all these events. I took it to the First Exposure Playtest Hall and Gen Con to get more playtesting and development in. And I was like, man, these are really awesome to make your game better. But there isn't anything like this on the West Coast. There wasn't any Protospiel or Unpub events. There was maybe an Unpub Mini here or there on the West Coast that had like 15 people. That was it. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to run one. So I put up boardgamebuilders.com. And last year, we ran our first event, and we got 200 people to show up, making us the second biggest one in the country. Only Unpub 5 was bigger. And then this year I did it again, and we got 270 people to show up and just to play prototype board games for 3 days. And so you can check out boardgamebuilders.com. If you're on the West Coast and you'd like to come, we're going to do it again next year. And it's a great opportunity to play lots of cool games before they hit the market, or if you're a designer, to take your game and really bring it to the next level.
Cool. Awesome. So you've got a lot of great stuff going on here, from a lot of great information there. So, Morgan, anything else we might want to throw at him before we maybe slide on out of here?
I think I was the mean one this podcast, so I'm good.
You're good. Oh, yeah. It's usually, yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm always the mean one. Yeah, it's just trying to put me in a hole here. Anyway.
Not mean at all. I had a blast. I'm very glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, Jeremy, I really want to thank you for taking your time to talk about your game and kind of letting us know a little bit more about you and so on. And we're really looking forward to this Kickstarter hitting the ground, and definitely looking at some of the other things. And we're definitely going to have to follow you and see what's going on here.
All right, man.
You got a lot of cool stuff going on here, it looks like.
I'm glad to do so. I'm really excited about Boost Barons. I think it turned out really well, and it's going to be a really fun game. And so I'm very glad to be here. It's fun to talk about Star Trek as well.
Trek TCG. Absolutely. Oh, I was totally down for that. So I was like, oh, this is really cool. Got, you know, because that was a game I really liked there.
It's a classic game, and it's still alive and kicking thanks to the players who love it so much.
Yeah, that's not hard to believe with the Star Trek fan base. I don't find that hard to believe at all, actually. So awesome. So anyway, once again, we really want to thank having you on the show, and I want to thank my co-host Morgan for joining me, and Jeremy, and we will be back in probably a couple of weeks or whatever, and everybody, go to this Kickstarter, get in on it. Sounds awesome. I know I'm going to be in on it. So anyway,
at least back it for a buck and do the choose your own adventure.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. Anyway, so, all right, folks, until our next episode, we'll talk to everybody then. Good night.